I waffled a little bit whether or not to bring this up, but I guess I will. I have mentioned before, our quarter is discussing the heroes of faith in Hebrews 11, but I've diverted from that a time or two on specific subjects, and one was on abortion. And although we're not involved and we're not taking political sides in any issue, but as Christians, we do have a viewpoint and a concern for subjects such as abortion. And as we elect our representatives, our president and vice president and our congressman, and we have a right, in fact, we have an obligation to let them know, they're supposed to be servants of the people, to let them know where we stand on particular subjects that affect us, especially as Christians. It's been talked about here that Christianity has been under attack, and I just heard this week that there was an organization that was going to put on an hour-long program, which they were going to pay for. It was not a public paid program, but the program was going to be on discussing attacks on Christianity. Well, a small group, according to the report, a small group of homosexuals complained to the TV stations, and one of them in, I think, Iowa, and one in Columbus, Ohio, refused to show the program because of that criticism. And we've said that Dan has mentioned it here, you know, that if we don't take a stand, at some point it could be restrictions on what a preacher could say about things that are considered by the Bible to be sins. This is a letter from Wayne Jackson's son, Jared. He has two sons named Jason and Jared. Does he have any more than that, Joe, or is that the only two? That's the only ones I know of. But they do on the internet. They have the newsletters that come out regularly. And let me just read what Jared wrote, and maybe it'll make you as mad as it made him. He says, I've been working on several new projects, so I've been very light on sending out the news. But what I'm about to share with you made me so mad, I had to stop what I was doing. Before I get to it, though, I have to give you a warning. This email will disturb and upset many, some for different reasons. It may offend your sensibilities. So I probably should apologize in advance for overturning your apple cart, but I won't, because this email is about the truth, about taking a hard look at reality. Can you tell I'm not my normal sweet disposition? What's got me so riled up? A newspaper article about a murder. A murder that will most likely not make the news headlines, not raise so much as an eyebrow on the national news. It won't, but it should. Why should this murder be more important than hundreds of others that go unnoticed each day? Because the case of Shanice Williams is a barometer of where this nation is, not where it is going, but where it is. Here's the sad story of her death. Shanice's mother, an 18-year-old, wanted an abortion. Her doctor gave her medication she would take for a couple of days prior to the abortion, medicine that would cause her to deliver the baby early. In case you aren't familiar with this procedure, it is preparatory to a partial birth abortion. And you remember this debate went on when George W. was president. The doctor, however, did not show up on time for the actual abortion, so Shanice was born at 23 weeks. Shanice and her mother looked each other in the face. In that instant, her mother bonded with her. In that instant, her 18-year-old mother realized it had been a human being inside her, not just a blob. Before anything else could happen, the owner of the abortion clinic, not a licensed doctor, came in and cut the umbilical cord, then took Shanice and put her in a garbage bag, which was then thrown into a dumpster. Shanice's body was recovered by police, an autopsy performed confirming she was breathing on her own when she died. If this doesn't bother you about where we are as a nation, I don't know what will. What's worse is that Shanice's mother has hired an attorney and has filed a lawsuit. Maybe she should. but I have very little sympathy. She was old enough to do the deed, but living with responsibility is now a rare thing. What really should happen is this. She went for an abortion. She took the medicine. She went to the clinic. As long as she didn't have to see her daughter, she was willing to let her baby be killed because Shanice was an unwanted pregnancy, an inconvenience and hardship. Skip down some. Where do you stand? Is protecting little babies like Shanice more important than money? You say yes. Well, I have a question for you. They're talking about a Born Alive Infants Protection Act, BAIPA. And there are a lot of people that have, in high places, that have backed that that position. But the point is that it's something that would possibly be voted on. And as a citizen, you have the right to let your wishes be known. There's a website for the White House, and there's, of course, you know, your senators and your congressmen. And if you're concerned about the millions that are killed each year, then and multi-millions since it started, I encourage you to do that. Okay, that's the downer part. Aspire to inspire before you expire. My wife and I had words, but I didn't get to use mine. This is humor. Am I the only one that's laughing? Frustration is trying to find your glasses without your glasses. The irony of life is that by the time you're old enough to know your way around, you're not going anywhere. God made man before woman so as to give him time to think of an answer for her first question. Okay. Just one quick time. We talked about Jephthah, and I don't want to dwell on this. We talked about his rash vow, and I did mention, I think last week, that the scripture that talks about his vow has the word or instead of and. And I can't pronounce Hebrew, but according to Clark commentary, the translation of this, which according to the most accurate Hebrew scholars, is this: I will consecrate it to the Lord, or I will offer it for a burnt offering. So it wasn't that whatever came out of the tent, I will offer for a burnt offering, but it was depending on what it was that that came out of the tent. And there's more could be said about that, but I just wanted to make that point. I didn't want to leave it hanging, and I did say that you're not going to be tested on that before you get to heaven, but although there are some scholars that disagree with that, many of them do, and according to him, that's what the Hebrew says. The other thing, we talked about David and a man after God's own heart, but I didn't give a specific scriptural location, and I wanted to do that. Any of you know where it says a man after God's own heart? It's in the Old and the New Testaments. 1 Samuel 13:14 says, "But now your kingdom shall not continue." That's talking to Samuel, talking to Saul. "The Lord has sought for himself a man after his own heart, and the Lord has commanded him to be commander over his people, because you have not kept what the Lord commanded you to do." And the other is in Acts 13 chapter. And we'll begin with verse 21. "Till Samuel the prophet, and afterward they asked for a king. So God gave them Saul, the son of Kish, a man of the tribe of Benjamin, for 40 years. And when he had removed him, he raised up for them David as king, to whom also he gave testimony and said, 'I have found David, the son of Jesse, a man after my own heart, who will do all my will.'" And that refers to the verses that I just read in 1 Samuel. And in Hebrews, the 11th chapter, we're talking about faith, and it's giving us all these heroes of faith that we've talked about over and over. And 11:32 says, "And what more shall I say? For the time would fail me to tell of Gideon and Barak and Samson, of Jephthah, also of David and Samuel and the prophets." Who was Samuel? Son of Hannah. And what about his birth? What was unusual about his birth? And we covered that a little bit in passing when we were talking about Samson's birth. His mother was barren, and she said, "What? Give me a son, and I'll dedicate him, dedicate him to the Lord." And so she did bear a son, and named him Samuel. And in a short period of time, he, 1 Samuel, the second chapter, in verse 11, says he was ministered to the Lord before Eli, the priest. And what do we know about Eli, just briefly? Had what?
He had some worthless sons.
Two worthless sons.
That he did not control.
Two worthless sons that he did not control. And so Hannah had dedicated Samuel to the Lord, and so there he was ministering to the Lord before Eli the priest. What did I say? According to Josephus, he was 12 years old. I don't know where he got that information, but that's what he said. And then in the third chapter of 1 Samuel, we find a fairly familiar story about Samuel while he's there in the ministering to Eli. And he hears this voice that said, "Samuel." And Samuel, what does he do? He goes in Eli and says, "What do you want?" He didn't use those words. And so Eli said, "I didn't call you. Go back to bed." So he went back, and another voice says, "Samuel." What's he do this time? He goes back to Eli. "You called, my Lord?" He said, "No, I didn't call you. Go back." So he went back to bed. Then the voice says, "Samuel." What's he do? Goes back to Eli. And Eli finally says, "It weren't me. It must be the Lord calling you." So when he calls again, you just say, "What is it?" And then Samuel lay down until morning. I beg your pardon, I skipped too far. "Samuel, Samuel," and Samuel answered, "Speak, for your servant hears." This is 1 Samuel, 3rd chapter, verse 10. "Then the Lord said to Samuel, 'Behold, I will do something in Israel at which both ears of everyone who hears it will tingle. In that day I will perform against Eli all that I have spoken concerning his house from beginning to end. For I have told him that I will judge his house forever for the iniquity which he knows, because his sons made themselves vile and he did not restrain them." We talked about he had two worthless sons and he didn't control them. And this scripture says they were vile and he did not restrain them. And center column says literally he did not rebuke them. "And therefore I have sworn to the house of Eli that the iniquity of Eli's house shall not be atoned for by sacrifice or offering forever." So Samuel lay down until morning and opened the doors of the house of the Lord, and Samuel was afraid to tell Eli the vision. Then Eli called Samuel and said, "Samuel, my son." He answered, "Here I am." And he said, "What is the word that the Lord spoke to you? Please do not hide it from me. God do so to you and more also, if you hide anything from me of all the things that he said to you. Then Samuel told him everything and hid nothing from him. And he said, it is the Lord. Let him do what seems good to him. And so Samuel grew, and the Lord was with him, and let none of his words fall to the ground. And all Israel, from Dan to Beersheba, knew that Samuel had been established as a prophet of the Lord. Then the Lord appeared again in Shiloh, for the Lord revealed himself to Samuel in Shiloh by the word of God. And the next time, one commentator said it's probably 20 years later, the next time that Samuel is suddenly among the people and he's warning them against their idolatrous practices, and that's in the 7th chapter of 1 Samuel. Verse 3 says, then Samuel spoke to all the house of Israel, saying, if you return to the Lord with all your hearts, then put away the foreign gods and the asterisks from among you, and prepare your hearts for the Lord, and deliver him only, serve him only, and he will deliver you from the hand of the Philistines. So the children of Israel put away the Baals and the Ashtaroths and served the Lord only. And right after that is the only military achievement that we know of involving Samuel. But they went against the Philistines. And verse 13 says, the Philistines were subdued, and they did not come any more into the territory of Israel. And the hand of the Lord was against the Philistines all the days of Samuel. It's amazing, isn't it, how many times the Philistines are involved in opposition to the children of Israel. And different judges, different prophets have come up and fought against them, as Samson did. And that was true of every tribe, all right? You know any tribe that didn't drive them all out? That did drive them all out? I don't think there's a record of any tribe that drove them all out. They all had people there, but as Joe says, that's what God told them to go in there and utterly destroy. And the land is what I've promised to you, but you've got to drive the people out. And they didn't do it. And after this, verse 17 of chapter 7, but he always returned to Ramah, for his home was there. There he judged Israel, and there he built an altar to the Lord. So he would go kind of on a circuit to these three cities, Bethel, Gilgal, and Mizpeh. But he lived in Ramah. And he married, and he had two sons. And what about those sons? Chapter 8 says, it came to pass when Samuel was old that he made his sons judges over Israel. The name of the firstborn was Joel, and the name of the second, Abijah, and they were judges in Beersheba. But his sons did not walk in his ways. They turned aside from after dishonest gain, took bribes, and perverted justice. So after Samuel was certainly aware of the sons of Eli and the evil that they did, and he was dedicated to the Lord, and yet his sons were doing the same thing. And what happened kind of as a result of this? He turned made his sons judges, and the people didn't like what was going on. Your sons don't walk in your ways. So now, here's what we want you to do. What? Pardon? Make a king. We want a king. These judges aren't working. Your sons are evil and they're vile. Well, that was Eli's sons, but these guys sound like they're pretty vile too. Dishonest gain, took bribes, and perverted justice. Is that the kind of judge you want? Once in a while in this day and time, we run into situations where the judges are doing that, taking bribes and committing all kinds of interesting things. And it's kind of like the men that we've talked about in Hebrews 11, that they had their named as heroes of faith. They did what God wanted them to do in certain areas, but it doesn't mean that their conduct was approvable in other areas. That's true. You know, it was true then, and it's true now. And so we have, certainly in our local area, we see things going on all the time, not only from the county commissioners, but we have detectives and I mean, some of these men are lieutenants in a sheriff's office or a city. We have school teachers and coaches. Sin is out there. The devil's out there seeking whom he may devour, and none of us are immune. Of course, we've said many times that all sin and fall short of the glory of God. But if we add to our faith virtue, knowledge, temper, and so, if these things be in you and abound, you will not be barren or unclean. So they said, make us a king. We want a king. We're tired of this judge thing because it's not working. But the thing displeased Samuel when they said, give us a king to judge us. So Samuel prayed to the Lord. And the Lord said to Samuel, heed the voice of the people in all that they say to you, for they have not rejected you, but they have rejected me, that I should not reign over them. Of course, all that God had done for them in bringing them out of Egypt and getting out of that, being laborers down there, all the miracles that were performed and all the things that provided, and they continued to murmur and go against God. And so they want somebody else to rule over them instead of God. According to all the works which they have done since the day that I brought them up out of Egypt, even to this day, with which they have forsaken me and served other gods, so they are doing to you also. Now therefore, heed their voice. However, you shall solemnly forewarn them and show them the behavior of the king that will reign, who will reign over them. So Samuel told all the words of the Lord to the people who asked him for a king, and he said, this will be the behavior of the king who will reign over you. He will take your sons and appoint them for his own chariots and to be his horsemen, and some will run before his chariots. I don't understand that exactly. He will appoint them for his own chariots to be his horsemen, and some will run before the chariots. I guess on horseback. He will appoint captains over his thousands, captains over his fifties. Will set some to plow his ground and reap his harvest, and some to make his weapons of war and equipment for his chariots. He will take your daughters to be perfumers, cooks, and bakers. And he will take the best of your fields, your vineyards, your olive groves, and give them to his servants. Sounds like communism. He will take a tenth of your grain and your vintage and give it to his officers and servants. He will take your male servants and female servants, your finest young men and your donkeys, and put them to his work. He will take a tenth of your sheep, and you will be his servants. And you will cry out in that day because of your king, whom you have chosen for yourselves, and the Lord will not hear you in that day. Nevertheless, the people refused to obey the voice of Samuel, and they said, no, but we will have a king over us, that we may also be like all the nations, and that our king may judge us and go out before us in battles. And Samuel heard all the words of the people, and he repeated them in the hearing of the Lord. So the Lord said to Samuel, heed their voice and make them a king. And Samuel said to the men of Israel, every man go to his city. So they wanted a king, and they got a king, and they were not obedient to God and didn't think of him as king. The same is true today. God is our king. We have his, he doesn't speak to us directly through living prophets, but he speaks through his word from his apostles and prophets. And we have a full understanding of the position of the Lord and what his job is and what he's done for us. And yet many of us still reject him.
The attitude of the...
I don't know whether everybody heard that, but said that some in the Lord's church today want to be like the denominations around about them and do things that others are doing, rather than relying on what our King, God of heaven, has said for us to do. Just as these people said, yeah, we understand that the king's going to do all this and going to do all that and doing that. Nevertheless, we want a king. We're going to do it. We're going to do it our way. In 1 Samuel, the 9th chapter, in verses 7 and 8, it talks about things that Samuel was involved in, some of the small affairs of life. Saul said to his servant, look, if we go, what shall we bring? Well, I skipped over naming Saul as to be the king. But Samuel was still there as a prophet. In fact, in the 7th chapter and verse 15, it says, and Samuel judged Israel all the days of his life. So he was evidently a judge even through the time of them having a king. Saul said to his servant, but look, if we go, what shall we bring the man? For the bread in our vessels is all gone, and there is no present to bring to the man of God. What do we have? And the servant answered Saul again and said, look, I have here at hand 1/4 of a shekel of silver. I will give that to the man of God to tell us our way. So they were going to him for all kinds of questions. And so his office, a great deal of reverence grew up around Samuel, and no sacrificial feast was complete without his blessing. Verse 13 of chapter 9 said, as soon as you come into the city, you will surely find him before he goes up to a high place to eat, for the people will not eat until he comes, because he must bless the sacrifice. Afterward, those who are invited will eat. Now, therefore, go up, for about this time you will find him. Yeah, in fact, I've got that written down, Joe. Glad you brought that up, because I had it in my notes and I skipped it. Chapter 7, start with verse 10. Now, as Samuel was offering up the burnt offering, the Philistines drew near to battle against Israel. Well, this is where I said it was first and only mentioned military battle that Samuel was involved in. But the Lord thundered with a loud thunder upon the Philistines that day and so confused them that they were overcome before Israel. I think that's an interesting verse. Thunder was so loud from God that they got confused. What's all that noise? And they were overcome by Israel. And the men of Israel went out to Mizpah and pursued the Philistines and drove them back as far as below Bethkar. Then Samuel took a stone and set it up between Mizpah and Shin and called its name Ebenezer, saying, thus far the Lord has helped us. So Ebenezer means stone of help. Now what is that song? It says, here I raise my Ebenezer. So next time we sing that, you'll know what that means. Here I raise my Ebenezer. So the Philistines were subdued, and they did not come any more into the territory of Israel. And the hand of the Lord was against the Philistines all the days of Samuel. And then in verse 15, it said that he judged them all the days of his life. And I wanted to mention what Samuel said. Okay, Samuel in chapter 12 of 1 Samuel, we've talked about what his sons did and the bribes they took and all the evil they did. Now Samuel said in chapter 12, verse 1, now Samuel said to all Israel, indeed I have heeded your voice and all that you said to me and have made a king over you. And now here's the king walking before you. And I am old and gray-headed. And look, my sons are with you. I have walked before you from my childhood to this day. Here I am, witness against me before the Lord and before his anointed. Whose ox have I taken? Or whose donkey have I taken? Or whom have I cheated? Whom have I oppressed? And from whose hand have I received any bribe with which to blind my eyes? I will restore it to you. And they said, you have not cheated us or oppressed us, nor have you taken anything from any man's hand. Then he said to them, "The Lord is witness against you, and his anointed is witness this day, that you have not found anything in my hand." And they answered, "He is witness." Then Samuel said to the people, "It is the Lord who raised up Moses and Aaron and who brought your fathers up from the land of Egypt. Now therefore stand still, that I may reason with you before the Lord concerning all the righteous acts of the Lord which he did to you and your fathers." And then he goes on to mention things that God had done for them. But what a contrast that he says to them, "I haven't cheated you. I didn't oppress you. I didn't do anything. I didn't take any bribes. But yet my sons did all of those things." So even though he was a proper example before them, they still did evil in the eyes of the people. First Samuel, the 25th chapter, in verse 1, says, "And then Samuel died, and the Israelites gathered together and lamented for him and buried him at his home in Ramah. And David arose and went down to the wilderness of Paran." So, what is unusual, based on what I said earlier about all of these men of faith that we've talked about, what is different about Samuel? Well, according to the record, what did he do bad? According to the record, there's nothing bad that he did. He's the first one that we've studied that there was nothing really to criticize about his life. Pardon?
His sons weren't that great.
Well, he was not a good father since his sons were bad. But he personally was one to be blessed. "What more shall I say? For the time would fail me to tell of Gideon and Barak and Samson and Jephthah, also of David and Samuel and the prophets, who through faith subdued kingdoms, worked righteousness, obtained promises, stopped the mouths of lions." Who through faith subdued kingdoms? Who do you think of in that regard? Of course, Joshua subdued the kingdoms of Canaan, and Gideon over the Midianites, and Jephthah over the Ammonites, and actually some of the Philistines, David the Philistines, Amalekites, Jebusites, Edomites, etc. And it says after Samuel and the prophets, these things are through many of the prophets who wrought righteousness. They carried the laws of justice into execution, particularly on the guilty nations, and they followed the great purposes of God in cutting off the enemies of God. Obtained promises, perhaps related primarily to the ultimate promise that was given to a couple of men who through their faith obtained the promised land, and that was who? The two spies, Joshua and Caleb. And so they, through their faith in God, they obtained the promised land. And while the rest of the Israelites were excluded. And of course, David, by his faith and obedience, obtained the kingdom of Israel and had the promise that through his seed, the Messiah would come forth and stop the mouths of lions. How many do we know that stopped the mouths of lions? Well, there's two that we've studied in this class, but there's another one that even more than that. Who's the first one that we know that killed a lion? Pardon?
Samson.
And he also ate honey out of that lion. And who else killed the lion? The lion and the bear. David. Now, what about one that we haven't studied in this, not listed in this group, who was involved in more than one lion. Daniel. Daniel in the lion's den. And so they were able to render harmless the king of the forest, which was kind of a dreaded thing in that time, still is today, and were regarded as quite an achievement to overcome the lion. And quenched the violence of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, out of weakness were made strong, became valiant in battle, turned to flight the enemies of the aliens. Quenched the violence of fire. Who do you think of that quenched the violence of fire? Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And that's an interesting story. Some of these are stories that we're very, very familiar with. And what was the story regarding Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego? They would not bow down to the image that the king had presented. And of course, these men went to the king knowing that Daniel wouldn't do it. So they went to him and said, you know what? You need to write down that whoever will not bow down to this image, will throw him into the fiery furnace. The king said, okay, I'll sign that. And he did. But it's kind of interesting that when the king told Daniel, you're going into the fiery furnace, what else did he say? Okay, Joe says, if your Lord is God. I just don't know that it said if. I wonder. Daniel chapter 6. Therefore King Darius signed the written decree. Now when Daniel knew that it was writing, he went home and da 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 da. And so the king gave the command, and they brought Daniel and cast him into the den of... Wait a minute, I got the wrong chapter here. Or the wrong verse. Well, I don't have the scripture. Anyway, the king had said, your God, I think he said, your God will deliver you when he put him in there. Anyway, we'll start here talking about lions and fire next week, our last week. And so you can have through the last few verses of Hebrews 11 down through verse 40.